Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining NASCA tonight. This is going to be scan number 2939. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we always have a question and call and discussion night with survivor professionals and using an open mic forum. And we'll feature a survivor professional co-host, and we'll field different topics brought on by the episode, by you, the listener, and many people that are family members here at NASCA. And tonight we have a special co-host with us. His name is Greg DeVoe from Mashpee, Massachusetts. And I'm going to get into a little bit about him in just a second. And I know we have some other callers on the line, so thank you for being here today. I'm going to read a little bit about NASCA before I start the show and tell you a little bit about us and what we do. NASCA stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. We here at NASCA, we want to address issues related to child abuse. And in that way, we offer platforms with child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. So with the childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first one is educating the public. Our main goal here at NASCA really is to educate the public on everything that we do. And that's along with often hope and healing. However, you know, with educating the public, you know, especially as it's related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sex abuse, okay, or CSA, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic and worldwide problem that affects everyone. Secondly, offering hope and healing, okay? Now, we do this through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone that is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So on, you know, our first goal, I want to touch back on that because that's kind of what this show tonight I think should be about. It's really about educating the public and also, you know, hear a story where someone has been through a lot of trauma, how he's overcome it and what he's done in his life. And I can't wait to hear his story along with everything else that he wants to put in. So, you know, this is what NASCA really is. It's such a great area. I do encourage everyone that if they want to call into the show tonight, we do have a call-in number here. It's dedicated to the NASCA show. It's Monday through Friday all the time. It's area code 646-595-2118. Okay, so if you just want to listen to the show, and you can do this by going on our website, and that is www.nasca.org. There is a microphone right there on the front page. You can click on it, wait a few seconds, and you'll see a live logo come up, and just click on it, and that'll bring you right into the show, and you can listen to it all night long. And you can listen to every other show, by the way, that we've done by just going on, you know, to our archives, like tonight's show, you know. So apparently I'm getting some lightning signals through the media here. We have a storm coming through. So anyway, without further ado, I do want to tell you a little bit about our guest coming through tonight, and his name is Greg DeVoe. He's from Mashpee, Massachusetts, and he quotes, "At the age of 18, I was involved in a fatal car accident, an auto accident," he says, "breaking several bones, including foot, tibia, pelvis, lower back, two vertebrae, neck, two vertebrae. I was paralyzed from the neck down. He was facing amputation and death. Death it was," he says. "My spiritual body left my physical body. I was comforted by God, who returned me to my physical body and restored the feeling back in my legs. God had him walking in 3 months, and by 9 months, he was running 3 miles. At age 27, I had only married a narcissist for 24 years, having 4 children. The only narcissist he ever knew was Hitler, but it was extreme. Greg went through identity theft, bankruptcy, and divorce. When I read about the 10 traits of a narcissist, she was a 10 out of 10. Lying, cheating, stealing, blaming it all on me and kids. She could do nothing wrong. Turned all the kids against him. But today he's married to a new wife and runs a carpentry business, building new homes and remodeling others. He's presently living in Cape Cod area." Okay. So on these episodes, I told earlier, this is a open mic forum tonight. Anyone's welcome to call into the show if y'all have a question or a comment. However, you know, this is kind of like Greg's co-host night, so it's his night. So, Greg, are you here with me tonight? Hello, is Greg here? So I do have 2 area codes that have called in, area code 661 and area code 617. So who do I have the pleasure of having on the line tonight?
Philip.
Hi, Philip. How are you? I recognize your number. You're the 661, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I also have area code 617. Oh,
yes,
hi, Nancy.
That's
how
Nancy.
Are you?
That's Boston. I grew up there. So 617
okay.
is Boston, is me. Yes.
Okay.
I was looking forward to hearing from our guest. I see he's from Massachusetts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he's at. Bill said that
hopefully
he was going to be here. I'm going to probably have to text Bill and let him know that he hasn't called in yet. You know, that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you may be running late.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got a con thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. So we can talk about all kinds of stuff, you know. I know that what I was reading up on him, though, was that, you know, apparently he went through a lot of trauma, which actually contributed. And, you know, of course, he went through some wrecks and accidents and stuff, you know. But he went through a lot of trauma-related issues, you know, with pain, you know. You know, what pain does when trauma sets in, and there's all kind of, you know, ways that we can really relate with that, especially, you know, if you're a victim of childhood sex abuse, you know, because I truly believe, and with everything, because I've done a lot of research on that, is that, you know, people that have been through a lot of trauma experience a tremendous amount of physical pain, you know, especially later on in their life as they get older. you know, I mean, things happen. I mean, they have issues of basically what I would just base down to having brain damage, okay, from being traumatized. And what I've read on it is that, you know, being that the trauma has set into certain neurons in the brain, what it does is that it'll prevent the areas that were traumatized, it'll prevent you from healing correctly, you know. So when that happens, you know, the spine is affected, okay. So then you start seeing issues of, you see, degenerative disc disease, which is probably the most common, you know. But you also see other things that come into play, you know, such as the neuros diseases that come out of this, you know, such as, you know, the PTSD, you know, fibromyalgia, you know, things of that nature, which can also, you know, kick in and then come into, you know, other mental disorders, you know. So it does have a major impact on what happens, you know. And if I was to really, you know, pinpoint an area that things happen to people, you know, I think it's the areas of the actual diseases, about how they're affected, you know. So in other words, if you have chronic depression, okay, and you were involved in a traumatic incident, you know, whether it be an auto accident or if you were affected by childhood sex abuse, okay, where, you know, how and where do we look at it from, what perspective, okay? So if you are dealing with depression at a serious level, which a lot of us have and may, you know, always deal with, is that how do you get help? You know, where do you turn to in the beginning? You know, so there's a lot there to look at. You know, it's a lot of it comes down to me, Nancy and Philip, is that I found out that early in someone's life, that because they don't know anybody, you know, that they could trust, because they don't have any platforms to turn to, that they try to stay, you know, out of the scene. In other words, they get isolated.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be involved in the public atmosphere because of what's going on. They fear that they won't be accepted in situations.
Then that leads
to a lot of social disorders, okay, that it's not their fault. They just don't realize what's happening, you know. It's only because I think as the growing process goes with trying to heal, so does the pain, you know. Both of them kind of work together as you grow, you know, on a physical and mental basis, okay. So at some point along that road, you know, there has to be a positive turnover from leaving that isolated, depressive, dark scene in your life where some people can live that all their life, okay? Or, you know, wanting, you know, to contribute in society. In other words, that means you, okay? It does, you know, it means what do you want to do now in your life? You know, how can you do this in your life? Something positive, something to move on from. I've seen people change careers, okay? I've seen, you know, people move from cities and states, literally. I mean, gone, you know? And I'm actually one of those people. I did that. I mean, you know, I tell both of you that I was dealing with this so hard years ago that I moved 800 miles from my hometown, you know. I mean, there was no way that I could stay here at the time, you know. Now I can. I mean, I'm back home now, and I've been home that for a very long time, but it took me a long time to get back, you know. So I had to deal with a lot of trauma, guys, you know. And that was my way back then of running from it, you know, basically. I was running from the guy in the system, which was the archdiocese. I ran from them, basically, because I was too embarrassed in society around here. All my friends knew what happened to me, you know. And so I let this situation, when, of course, I was so young, but I let it get to me. You know, I did not want to face it around here. I didn't want to face my parents. I didn't want to face my friends and my family, due to the fact that as I was growing up even older, that to me it almost became even more embarrassing, you know, because now I was growing into a man, right? And the fact that I had hid from it and ran from it for so long is that it was almost like, you know, what's the use, you know, anymore and trying to fight it, you know, because no matter what we did back then, okay, it didn't work, you know. I mean, we did all the right things. You know, a lot of you that don't know my story, we took our, the pedophile to court. He was acquitted. He went on to rape over 26 other kids later. So, you know, but at least, you know, I thought then that we were doing the right thing. And, of course, you know, today I look at it, and we did. However, you know, it paid a serious, impact on my life and so did my family's. I didn't even get to see my brother grow up because I moved away. You know, in fact, my mom was pregnant 7 months when we were in that courtroom and he was acquitted. So, you know, not long after that, you know, yes, I saw my brother till he was about 4 or 5, but after that, I moved, you know, and of course I came back every now and then, but, you know, it's just the fact that how many generations does it affect, you know, it affected that, it, you know, and this goes on with everybody, you know. So, you know, what I'm getting at with the depression end is that this is what happens to people. It scares the living hell out of them, you know, because they don't know how to cope in a lot of situations, you know. And I think that's what NASCA does really well here, is to offer, you know, some type of platform for people, you know, to go to and find somebody they can connect with. You know, I mean, don't you agree with that, Nancy?
Yep, I agree with that. As survivors of abuse, there's a lot of things when we talk we're able to relate to. And when you were just speaking about, you know, we protect ourselves by building this this wall, and that's the way that we protect ourselves from being hurt. And what happens is, you end up shutting down. You end up shutting down from a lot of social activities, social events, socializing, especially when you come across, let's say, relationships that have failed. And, you know, you have trust issues with people, or you caught people, you know, kind of like doing things or saying things about you or what have you. Those things, When it breaks your trust, walls go up. It's just something natural that we do. But like you said, when we get educated or when we join groups, when we get support, we learn how to deal with those things and those triggers and not allow it to just to take over our lives and keep us isolated and make us feel alone. There's a lot of different groups that you can be a part of. And definitely if you're recovering from trauma, abuse, anything like that, NASCA is definitely number one choice for me, because like I said, you know, we are, you know, we have all kinds of people here from all walks of life who share their story. Some have professional backgrounds. Some of them just have extensive knowledge from having to recover. And so we all bring something to the table, and we're all able to make this a better and safer place. And just being able to tell our truth, you know, being able to tell our story our way as much as we want, and not being forced to tell everything, but to be able to grow. And I've grown here when I've shared my story. When I started, I was, you know, I kept things very, very light. And then little by little, you start to open up. Everyone has layers. So, you know, keep showing up. I love the fact that, you know, we're getting used to Phil. Phil's getting used to us. We're building a relationship. And that's what it's about. You know, we may not be able to be in the same city with each other, but we do make some form of effort to connect, even if we're home, even if we are isolated, reaching out, calling, reaching out, going into when we do have Zoom meetings or Zoom groups or, you know, virtual events or whatever it is, us right now on the radio, is just a blessing. It's a blessing for many of the people that feel alone but can resonate. Some of the things that we talk about can resonate in their hearts. And it's just a beautiful ministry, a beautiful project, a beautiful team to be a part of, you know, because our focus really is to help people heal and to let them know that they're not alone. We all make mistakes. People who've been through trauma, they really struggle in a lot of areas where people think, oh, that's common sense. Why didn't you do this or why didn't you do that? Sometimes you sit down and, you know, you literally can't even move. You're processing things. You know, there are environmental triggers. There are people who say things to trigger intentionally. You know, you try to pray those things away, but those are things that are just part of life. And really getting the tools and understanding and the wisdom on how to navigate these kind of difficult people or these difficult situations is a blessing. Like, you know, it's really been helpful to me, honestly, in conjunction with everything else that I'm putting in place myself. I think we just really have to be intentional and focus on our healing. Like, we have to take accountability for healing. Like, nobody's coming to save us. Nobody's coming to help us. Nobody's coming to take the pain away or the problems away. But definitely us saying, hey, we're not alone. Let me see what resources they are. And like you said, you know, NASCA, we have wonderful resources on the website. And someone's always available because all of us care. All of us care. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud to be a part of that family, community.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and that's another thing that, you know, if you go into NASCA's website there's a contact list and information, and that you can, you know, find me on there and all of us, actually. All the hosts are there. I think you're on there, too. Mm-hmm. And Bill, and they even have a night owl who's Carol Vane. She puts that next to her name in case someone needs to call, I mean, late at night. And I've had those calls, too. I've had many, many of those calls. And I'll tell you why. There's a lot of times that people just reach certain times that they want to talk about it, that they feel like they're up to talking about it. Another thing that comes in play with that, I find, when people are, you know, growing and in that state of wanting to start sharing their stories and helping, you know, society, is that they have a lot of sleeping situations, you know. They take a lot of medications. So there's all kinds of things, not to mention drugs and alcohol, you know. I mean, it's no question. So, you know, if someone, you know, is wanting to, you know, speak at certain times, I mean, I don't want to turn the phone on, you know, off and turn my back away, should so to speak. But, it, you know, but if I do run into it, that I try never to turn my back on somebody, you know. And if I can, you know, talk at another time, if I can't at the moment, I'll get back with them. But I've always been there for people, and I'm glad about that, because it means a lot to me to know that maybe if I did help someone out in a certain situation, you know, maybe send them in the right direction if I don't know, you know, myself what to do. Because I've had an extensive track record of dealing, you know, with people for many years. So I've seen the complete, you know, worst of it, including dealing with the people that harm me, you know, and where they stand in their life. That's another thing, because I think people that go through this for the first time, I think they look back at it, and they either think two things. Either they thought that they could handle it on their own, number one. Secondly, that they may have waited you know, way too long to do it before they did do it, okay? So that does work with each other, you know. But what I do find is that once somebody does and that they can actually connect with other survivors, okay, that are just like them in so many ways, and it doesn't matter about the extent of the abuse. I don't look at that myself, okay? I know that there's levels of it, okay? There's, of course, you know, and that's unfortunately how the law works. There's always levels of it. They have to put it somewhere, you know. But I don't look at that. You know, if someone was abused in their life, I mean, that is child abuse, you know, and it's really a hard thing for anyone to overcome. And that's just, you know, just getting back on the fact that there's so much trauma-related issues off of that, that, you know, it leads to, you know, so many things. And I guess one of the things that I've really started to hit on tonight more than anything was probably the depression side of things, you know. And I'd like to kind of stick with that for a little while, just because I think every one of us goes through it. Okay, it's just the fact that either we are going through it or we still deal with some of it, you know, and who knows what it's going to take for people not to be that way, because there's different levels of it, you know, and that's another thing that as you get educated on it is that you realize that you may actually classify yourself in one of those categories, you know. But, you know, one in particular is just like major depressive disorder, okay? It's more than just, you know, just simply like feeling sad, okay? It's experiencing, you know, really grief, you know, being like super drained of energy, things of that nature. You know, and those feelings are totally valid. You know, but like most feelings, you know, they'll eventually pass. Okay, so MDD isn't like often debilitating mental illness. Okay, and it presents just a cluster of symptoms. You know, so for most people, you know, clinically depression won't go away. You know, on its own, and you can't just like snap out of it. Okay, you know, while there's other types of, you know, melancholy and exhaustion, a part of depression. There's other symptoms to look for, you know, including like losing interest in things, which is a big thing. I mean, that's one of the things that I looked at to me was losing interest in situations, you know, that you want. I mean, literally that you once enjoyed. Okay, I mean, I'm talking really enjoyed. You know, like music and maybe sports of some kind, and you know that you just totally just lost interest in it. You know, there's other things too. You know, that come into play, like sleeping big time, trouble sleeping. I think everyone, you know, has that symptom in any type of depression that you might see. There's a lot of crying spells, very sudden, though, you know, crying spells, because they can kick in at any given time. You know, I know I've seen it and I've lived it, is that you never know when you could get triggered, like Nancy said, about something related to a situation that'll just, you know, bam, all of a sudden, you know, there you are. You know, I mean, it's just that fast. You know, and not to mention,
yeah,
you know, withdrawal. Go ahead.
Right. No, I was just going to say, and a lot of times people say, you know, you choose to get offended or you choose to get angry or you choose to get upset. But when you're dealing with triggers and you're educated in that area, you learn that sometimes you're not in control. That's why you have to – healing is a lifelong journey. You have to keep working on learning what the tools are that you could use. It's a consistent thing because you did not choose to be abused. You did not choose to experience trauma. So now your body is trying to cope with this trigger, this attack against your life. And your body may go into this, you know, freeze mode where, you know, attack mode where you're like defensive, you're feeling attacked, and you may act out of character because you is just there's a lot of buttons that you can push that you don't understand what you're even pushing. So that's why when you see
right.
people out here acting crazy, jumping out of their cars, you know, killing people, and just from a silly road rage situation, I tell my kids, don't sit there
yeah.
and argue with people. You don't know if they're off their head. Go there with people. Don't push buttons. You don't know what button you're pushing. Because then when the person is reactive and reacts wild because they're defending themselves, you'll think that the person is a horrible person, but it's not. It's you push buttons that you know nothing about. So just sit back
mm-hmm.
in the back of the class and learn something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, we have
in the back,
a lot of that same stuff is going on down here on the streets right now in New Orleans,
right.
and it's pretty bad,
right.
you know. I hate
yeah,
to say
very
it, but, yeah, very dangerous situation down there right now. But, you know, and going with that, too, is that, you know, another thing that I mentioned earlier with this would be withdrawing from others, okay, which to me kind of may have been, in my way, the best way at one time and also the worst way at another time, you know. But I wasn't sure when to even, you know, realize when that time was going to come for me, you know. And it took many years, you know, for me to realize that I couldn't face this or overcome this, you know, by myself anymore. You know, is that I needed someone else, you know, to
right.
to get through this. And I think what it was for me was the fact that I was just growing up into a man, you know, and I was trying to let that boy go from years ago, and I just never could. You know, it's just like he always was there, no matter how old I grew. You know, I was intimidated by what happened to me. It was a lot, you know, and I know a lot of us go through this same thing. I don't want to, you know, use this, you know, specifically about my story, but it's just the way that my story happened. I relate to almost everybody's story because I had so much involved, you know, on that scale was that I think a lot of us can relate with that, you know. And I know that there's also, you know, withdrawing from others, of course, but also having feelings of hopelessness, you know. That is huge when it comes down to what NASCA does here, what all of our, you know, brothers and sisters here at NASCA do. You know, it's the fact that you don't have to feel that way here. You know, that's why we offer that platform, is because I think it's one of the best platforms that we have. Simply for the fact of who is here, you know, for you at given times. And I think most of all, it's
right.
about who is here right now, you know. That's the thing. We have an excellent, you know, group of hosts now, including you, Nancy, that are part of this, you know, great family that we have. And at any time, we all have so much to give. I think that any of us can benefit someone's life out here at any time, any day, any situation. You know, so I think that's really special about you know what
you
we have gone.
You're correct, because a lot of us have been through a lot of different had to recover from a lot of different traumas, and are still recovering in our own fragile state. At times, okay, so we're not, me personally, I can say, I'm not going to say I'm perfect and I'm healed, set free and delivered from everything. Healing is a journey, but I'm intentional about my healing. I'm being more intentional about my healing. There's things that I don't deal with because I'm focused on trying to heal. It's so much work that there's things that I'm like, oh, my God, I haven't done that. I haven't done this. I need to take care of that. Oh, my God, the deadlines are coming. And that's part of people who are recovering and dealing from trauma. A lot of times you hear that. They may procrastinate or overdo a lot of work. I catch myself doing that sometimes. Or, you know, when it comes to the language barrier for me, sometimes, I mean, there's so many things I have to read through and process, and sometimes my brain is just exhausted. I'm being honest. And sometimes I check out, you know. I'm
mm-hmm.
learning how to not allow things to overwhelm me, okay? And for me, sometimes
mm-hmm.
it's saying, you know what, I'm walking away from this. I'm going to go take a break, and I'm going to go breathe. My chest is tight. My stomach is tight. My stomach gets tight. My chest gets tight. And I feel a lot of tension sometimes on my back or my the back of my neck.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I feel those things coming on, I just get myself away, excuse myself, and sorry whoever's offended, but I have to know how much weight I can bear. And I have to learn how to how to set boundaries, you know, around myself, for myself, and for some of the people who may not understand, you know, the amount of pressure that I may be, you know, that I'm going through on a whole lot of different levels. So, you know, we have to learn to advocate for ourselves and be accountable in our healing and take control of our healing. It's a process. Like I said, I still have a lot of things I need to take care of. I can't even sit here. I can't even believe God gave me a chance to be a part of the mic. You know, even grab the mic because I'm not in any way putting anyone down. I'm just saying we understand. Like, seriously, we understand the process.
Yeah.
And be gentle with your healing. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it is all about. You know, it's about having the empathy, you know, that it takes to deal, you know, with this. Because we understand what that's like. And, you know, having empathy for something is so important when you are a victim of childhood sex abuse. Because, you know, we're sick and tired of hearing things that affect us more than things that help us, you know, because the way the laws work, it's depressing on these survivors trying to get justice and everything it takes to go through it. It could bring you down, you know, to the point where you don't want to deal with it anymore. It'll put you right back into that depression stage where, you know, again, like all the things that I read to you earlier and stuff, that it's pretty serious, you know, and that's when you said about the fact of learning, you know, how to find your boundaries, you know, those boundaries to me have been my rock and my stone, so to speak. I built that stone wall for that boundary, thank God, you know, years ago. And I'm not perfect either, you know, Nancy, don't get me wrong. I do have, you know, situations. I have moments, you know, but how I handle them these days is much different than the way that I did it years ago, you know. And I do have to get credit to how it happened to me, okay? How it happened to me was the fact that I actually got with other survivors, okay? And that's back before, you know, we had everything gone for us that we had. And let me put that in a category now. We still have a long way to go when it comes down to getting justice and things that we need to heal. And, you know, but from where we were, you know, say as little as 5-6 years ago, you know, there has been a tremendous amount of help and support, you know, for a lot of victims, not just here in the United States, but also around the world, you know, due to, you know, the movement of the survivors finally coming forward.
Yep.
And you know what it is, too, is that a lot of these survivors are actually turning in to be politicians and doctors and lawyers. And because we grew up, you know, we grew up. And you know, because the majority of the population that was affected by the numbers now, okay, would have been in the 70s, okay? So, and into the 80s. So even though it was happening before that, yes, it was. But as far as the documents go that we have to prove and things of that nature, you know, yes, it stems all the way back in time, no question about it, you know? Always been going on.
Right.
But, The average age is how they list it is like in the low 50s, like 52, right? So if you go back and do the math to where everyone is now, you know, and where the movement started, it took a lot of good, responsible people because they grew up, they became of age, they had careers, and then it just happened, you know? And now we're all like generously working together through many more organizations. You know, years ago, there might have been like just SNAP, you know, and maybe a couple of other ones that started way back, but they never lasted. In other words, yes, there would be a SNAP organization in existence, but in certain areas there was no SNAP in this state or no SNAP in that state, you know, and it was just all over. Now I think there's a lot of different organizations in every single state, you know, but the thing about us, though, is that NASCA is worldwide, we're international, you know, and that we have a huge, you know, a growing of family members all over the world, which is great. And that way, you know, we need to learn from what's going on, you know, not only here, but also, you know, across the seas, so we can experience, you know, what everyone is going through to help us, you know, go through this. Because, I mean, education is everything, you know. And this is where people's stories come in, right?
Right.
Is that every story, like I was saying before, I don't care, you know, if it was the minimum standard in someone's eyes or the worst, you know. We have to know about it to a certain degree. I mean, people don't have to get into details, right, if they don't want to.
Right.
But we get the picture. But it's how, you know, things happen to you, how you were affected, how you are growing, where are you today, what, you know, and what are you doing these days, and things of that nature, you know, that we learn from, you know, because here's the thing, is that some people can't listen to these shows live, right?
Yeah.
There is a lot of people that is all over the place, but a lot of people go back the next day and listen to these shows all the time, you know. Last night there was a caller came back, you know, he's listening to a show before, came back on for a little while and he left. And, you know, I'm just saying that, that people do, you know, come on and listen to the shows. So, yeah, I do see that we have a caller that just called in. Oh, that's Bill. Okay. But anyway, I guess I can bring him in since he called in. Bill, how do you do? This is Bill, everyone. He is our president.
I did mean for you to bring me on, yeah. So thank you very much, John. I'm listening to some of the last couple of comments, and you IM'd me that the guest hadn't showed up, and that's very upsetting to me. But I apologize
to the
audience.
We're doing fine. We're doing fine.
But
I don't know where he's at.
I don't either. And I had multiple emails back and forth to him this past week to get everything straight and to, you know, do things the way he wanted. And I don't. And it was obvious he remembered this week. You know, he brought it up first tonight.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're struggling now, let me just say to the audience, with getting people to come on and commit to us. So please do call in, because these hosts and co-hosts really deserve support. They work very hard, and the whole staff does, to put together shows. And the only thing we can do when a guest doesn't show up like this is do a sort of a general discussion show, which I know John is doing tonight. But it's just a big burden to have to figure out where is the guy and is he going to call in or not and blah, 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 blah. John, I'm very grateful to you for doing this, and Nancy, too. I see Phil is there. I'm not going to say I'm grateful for Phil because he never talks.
That's okay. He can listen all he wants to. Oh, he can kick
it's
in any time he wants to, too. That's why it's open.
Anytime.
If he wants to say anything,
anytime.
He's more than welcome. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anytime.
Okay.
But I'm just apologizing on behalf of NASCA for listeners who may have come to the show thinking they were going to hear a guest that has not appeared. It's terrible.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
I'll stay on with you.
It is.
Maybe I can help the show a little. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's okay. I think it's up to you. I'll just go ahead and put you back on mute. You can sit back and listen if you want to. If you want to kick in, hey, it's up to you. You know, you can always get back in.
Well, I don't mind. I'm here now, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, basically what I was talking about a few minutes ago was that, you know, we were getting into the fact, you know, since actually I was reading a little bit about Greg in the beginning, and then, you know, then it started into trauma and it went into depression, okay, because so many of us deal with depression on a daily basis in different kinds, right? Well, I started out with the with basically MDD, which, if nobody's familiar with that, it's called major depressive disorder, which is expensive, okay? And let me tell you why it's called major, because you have to actually have this for 2 weeks or more to qualify for this, okay? I know it sounds like, well, isn't depression just depression? Well, actually, the word depression is pretty solid in itself, but there are classifications of it, okay? So, like, I'll give you an example. You know, with that being said, we talked about a lot of things that earlier about, you know, the isolation and getting away from society and having trouble sleeping and all of that. But, you know, having it for 2 weeks or more, you know, that's saying one thing, you know. But many people with clinical depression, okay, they do their best to conceal it, the symptoms, you know, from around them. So, I mean, like they feel vulnerable and embarrassed for showing weakness or a worry that their friends and colleagues might judge them or, I don't know, just plain ghost them, you know. And I know I've seen that happen to me for sure. Or did they ghost me, you know, no doubt about it. But just remember that MDD, okay, is not a negative attitude, okay, a character flaw or a sign of weakness, okay? Some people with depression can't recognize depression in themselves, okay? It's another big thing right there. They're not necessarily imperceptive. Symptoms can pop up gradually, you know, and before you know it, I mean, you haven't been to work, showered, you know, or changed out of your pajamas in 3 days, you know. So, you know, classic depression, you know, attributes to like homelessness and suicidal commitments, you know, are easy to spot. You know, but some signs are less obvious also, you know. So there are a lot of signs, you know, of major depression, okay? So I'm just going to kind of go through these, you know, that everyone can kind of relate to. At any given time, if y'all just want to, you feel like you need to step in or say something about this particular one, you're more than welcome to. We can always, you know, go on from there. But number one would be, say, not caring about things that used to excite you, okay? Just giving an example of that. And maybe we'll just do that. If y'all just want to maybe kick in with this and we'll just go through each one, if y'all have something to say on it. You know, in this first one, it's not caring about the things you used to excite you, right? So with me, you know, when if you don't see me playing a guitar on the side somewhere here and there, it's that would be it, you know. With me, I mean, that's probably the most thing that I could see that people would be able to see in me, okay, that I could relate to that way. Now, I mean, the other things that I might do, I don't know, it might be just maybe, you know, keeping my truck cleaner than usual or something toward that effect, you know, but little things that way, you know. So what about you, Nancy? You got anything on that you could, you know, give us an example maybe of or maybe a comment on that number one? Uh-huh.
Yep. So the number one question, like things that we do to help us with our mental health, to keep?
No, with that, yeah, but basically – there were 11 signs or 11 symptoms of being depressed from that. Okay.
Right.
So the first symptom was just not caring about things that excite you.
Okay. Yeah.
So
I can agree with
maybe
that.
Give us, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, definitely. You know, if you notice yourself, if you used to hang out with friends or if you used to go for a walk, working out, and that's, I guess, that's why I got stuck there for a second. But, you know, like you said, things that used to excite us, whether it's, you know, you're, you know, meeting up with friends for a book club or, you know, things like that. If you're notice yourself withdrawing away from those things that you like to do that keep you connected and happy and joyous, yeah, definitely pay attention. That is a red flag. That was good. Anybody else?
How about you?
Phil.
Anybody else want to say anything on that? Bill? No?
Maybe
okay.
For me, like working on a puzzle
okay.
next to my window at night.
Wait, can you repeat that again? What was that?
Working on a puzzle next to my window at night.
Oh. Okay.
That's nice.
Okay. Right.
That's fine.
Okay. Yeah, sure
okay.
enough.
So if
that,
you,
actually,
if
that's,
you
that's,
find
that's,
yourself
that's,
not doing it?
Yeah.
If I find myself not doing it.
Definitely can be. So
sorry,
then,
Phil. What were you going to say? Like, yeah, does that happen to you? Like, you don't want to do it sometimes? Or what do you catch from that?
What?
Sometimes do you feel that not doing the puzzle is when you're, like, feeling kind of, like, you know, like, disconnected? Or is that something that you consistently do for fun?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay, nice.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nice.
All right. So the second thing would be transforming into a negative, I hate to say this.
Oh, yeah. Don't say
Nancy.
Don't say my name.
I know.
No. Negative Betty or something.
Right,
negative
here.
Betty. Don't say.
I know.
Negative it's Betty.
How about this?
Else.
How about this? A negative Ned or
person.
Nat is, you know, is what it says. So,
right.
Yeah.
That
I mean,
negative person.
Absolutely for me with that is that I did turn into that, you know, on a lot of things. However, for a very long time, I was also very positive, too, but I was negative about certain things, you know, so I wasn't always negative about every single thing, but you know what that came into play, though, is that I was very defensive, I think, too, you know, like not trusting a soul on the planet kind of negative way, you know, which
right,
led me
right.
to being defensive on that, you know, so that I guess that would be pretty much my way of being that negative person, you know. So,
right. But
can,
some people are just
so
negative
share,
about everything.
That.
Yeah. Some
That's
people
true.
Are just
That's
really
true.
Negative about everything. I mean, I've yeah. been with people where I'm like, hey, well, maybe you could do this. They're like, no, because da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe, you know, you're trying to look at the bright side, at least try to look at the bright side. And it's very difficult for them because when you're in that dark place, just like you were sharing earlier, when you are in that dark mm-hmm. place, it's hard to see light. And that's why it's important
yeah.
to surround yourself with people that will shed the light and bring you back. Because when you're in that dark place, it's lonely. And, you know, you hear the negative voices that don't tell you positive things. And then you start to speak the
mm-hmm.
negativity. Then your day goes negative. Because the more you speak it, like everything goes wrong. Then everything goes wrong. So, you know, changing
yeah.
our language. But you're right. Yeah. Depression doesn't
and it
make
makes
you
wonder
know,
too that when you bring that up that these people
yeah.
that are always negative, it makes you wonder if they're truly depressed on the inside, you know, and that they're
right.
not one of these
right.
people that show it, or they haven't
right.
found a way to get help,
yeah.
you know.
Well,
and then again, there's also different personality disorders, you know, that do come into play. So, you know, you have to look at all the
right.
all the sides to that, that's for sure. So, what about you, Phil? Do you want to say anything on that one? Okay. We'll go to the next one then. The next one is avoiding your friends and your family. Okay. That I can definitely tell. It happened to me in a lot of ways. Okay. It happened to me not only... Okay, it looks like Phil left us. Okay. It looks like that avoiding your friends and family. I avoided my family by moving away for a very long time, for 15 years. Avoiding my friends now, I actually reached out, you know, to my friends and tried to find that friendship in them at a very young age, where I was basically denied, you know, the friendship. So, in other words, I wound up going to, from the time that my abuse happened to me until the time that that I actually moved away and everything else, I went through six schools, okay? Yeah, six different schools since I was eight. by the time I graduated high school, okay? That's a lot. And it wasn't, I wasn't a bad student, you know. I was always a really good student, you know. It was just the fact that I was so distracted by what happened to me that my friends were at every single school that I went to. And every time I tried to reach out and, you know, and to go to these friends, because of what happened to me, you know, in the environment, their parents, you know, basically told them not to, you know, be with us because we, at the time, we, and even later on, we were involved in Catholic schools. And then that's where I went, you know. So I wanted to try to get back into it after my abuse happened later on, and it just never worked out for me, you know. So I eventually had to get out of the Catholic school system totally, where I did find some friends, you know, and I accepted those friends like family, you know. I mean, it was like it's everything I had at that time, because that's all I cherish, you know. I wanted that friendship I had when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. When you're at that friendship stage where these friends last with you forever and ever, you know. And those are the ones that I desperately wanted, you know, for to be there with me. But it was a long road for me to find. And even those, the friends you think of friends, aren't friends, you know. Your true friends, to me, will always be for you, be there for you when you know, the times get tough. And you know, that long term, it'll definitely be there for you, you know. So I know we do have a couple of callers. So actually, we have a new caller that's called in. This is area code 908. How are you?
That would be me.
Oh, it's Miss Carol. How are you, Carol?
Well, I'm lying in bed, but other than that, I'm okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling in. Did you have something that you wanted to talk to us about?
I had told Bill that I'd give a call tonight because I had some heavy-duty testing done and so forth, as you know about.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, mm-hmm. I was listening to what you were talking about. You're talking about all the schools that you're in and different friendships and all this other stuff. I unfortunately mm-hmm. had to do that to my kids, okay? And mm-hmm. That's not easy on children to, you know, they form relationships. And then all of a sudden, you uproot them. And
right.
They go to a new school, and it's very hard, you know, for them to, you know, to try and make new relationships and all this other stuff. And that's what happens so often in dysfunctional families. You know, is mm-hmm. In my case, I left there by a father, and I had to. And I've given him three chances, and three strikes you're out, as the saying goes. But I had to try to better myself with jobs, and probation didn't know where he was, and only because they had misspelled his name. And I had worked with probation, and they gave me you know, his records and so forth. I said, for God's sake, you have his name down wrong. So once they got his name down the correct way, it was only his middle initial. That's all it takes. Okay? They found him. They found him. And then he started giving child support and garnishing his wages. So mm-hmm. then it made it a little bit easier, you know, easier on me, which made it easier on the kids. But so I was listening to what you were saying, you know, and my kids went to Catholic school too. And they had gone to public school, but the area in which we lived, the area was pretty bad, mm-hmm. pretty rough.
Yeah. Yeah, he is real rough here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my mother did help me getting the uniforms and all of this stuff, because that can be awfully expensive at Camden. So mm-hmm. anyway, we got the kids' uniforms and put them in Catholic school. And that was helpful, and their grades came up, and they made friends. And actually, my son still has a friend today who was from when he went to school, and that we're taught in my grade school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So Yeah, but dysfunction in the family causes so much, you know, dysfunction within the children and also with the parent or parents. So I guess that's sort of like what you were talking about. I don't know, because I just picked up the phone. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. I mean, you know, that's what it does. And that's what happened to me, basically, was that I was basically in a dysfunctional state for many years, you know. And as I grew out of that that environment, and which means that by the time that I actually started going to a private school, okay, it had already been, let's see, from fourth grade all the way through fifth, sixth, seventh, and then eighth. So that was 3 to 4 years right there of my life that I was bouncing around schools, okay, until I went to a private school where I did find, you know, those friends. And so my life did start to change in that way better, you know. However, you know, think about it, though. You're going from school to school, trying to, you know, learn, get an education. One school might not be on this and another one's on that, or you may have already had something and you got to go through it again. And, you know, it's just so confusing, you know, and it was for me. I was actually falling behind, trying to make it up. And then things would happen where, you know, my friends, you know, weren't talking to me and finally getting caught up. And then, it was like, wow, you know, where's the time going? You know, and before I knew it, I was a junior in high school, and I only had, because I actually went into my freshman year. By the time my freshman and sophomore year were really tough for me, because I was trying to make up for the years I lost through the Catholic school system, right? And then I only basically had it really truly about two years of solid high school, you know, and barely graduated. I had to pull my grades up extensively at the end just to get out of there. And then I did go to college for a while, but, you know, fortunately for me, I was just a great ball player, and it helped me get in. But, of course, you know, I moved, you know, just because of the fact that where I lived, where is the same area that my abuse happened, and my parents still live close to that school today. And, you know, now I can ride by it every day. I see it every day. But back then, I could not deal with the environment, you know, of going to a store or the local playground or, you know, things, you know, all the functions that were going on where all these friends would be that were turning their backs on me because of what happened to me, you know. So it was a very difficult environment for me, and that's why I moved. And when I moved far away. I just didn't move like, you know, 10, 20 miles. I moved 800 miles away. So, you know, by doing that, I just basically picked my life up and moved it to a different state, you know. And so I basically lived there for a very long time. Wound up having a family there. And I did make it back to, down back to Louisiana. Right by Hurricane Katrina, which was in 2005, you know.
I remember that.
I had been gone from Louisiana truly since about 1990, you know, all the way up until then. So that's a very long time to be gone, you know, from your family and where you grew up at over what happened to me. You know,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, you know, you can believe that that I was seriously depressed. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you hold resentments against your parents? Did you have like?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
No question about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to realize too, Carol, is that, you know, we brought this man to court, right? I mean, here I am, a little boy sitting on. In front of a jury, well, not a jury, but a bench trial, in front of you know, a whole courtroom of people sitting in that chair, you know,
yeah.
And it was very, very hard on mm-hmm. she, you know. So,
she
yeah,
peed.
It left a mark.
Right there on the
definitely.
Floor. The bottom uh-huh. was there. Uh-huh. I sprayed it and wiped it with that, but I got to move that thing.
That's Nancy telling someone something.
Oh, Lord, sorry, y'all.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, I'm thinking about this because my son, now he knew his father was very dysfunctional, and I wasn't great either, okay? I was still trying to heal, let's put it that way, from my past. And mm-hmm. his father, that would be my first husband, and, of course, my daughter, you know, with all the moving around and all this other stuff, my son actually, he had a, I'm going to say he didn't hate me, no, he didn't. He loved me, but it was like a love-hate type of relationship. And at times he would punch me hard in the arm. I remember walking down mm-hmm. the street with him, and, ooh, he let off and punched me hard in the arm. And then some old ladies, now I'm saying they were old, yes they were, they were sitting on their front porch and they were sitting there and they observed this, and I saw their faces and they had this shocked look on their face, and I did tell my stepfather about it, and he did hurt my arm. It was my right arm, not my left arm, it's hurting today. But although the two felt the same now that I think about it. But anyway, the point is my stepfather did take him and more or less put him to the ground. He didn't hurt mm-hmm. him, don't get me wrong. And besides, he was by this time, he was a teenager. And but my stepfather was strong, and he got my son down. And he said, don't you ever put your hands on your mother again. I think she's had enough of that. So David got up and he looked at me, and he put his eyes down to the ground, and he said he was so sorry. So you see, what happens is, you know, kids, when they come from so much dysfunction and when there's trouble with, you know, physical abuse, sexual abuse, all kinds of things that happen in dysfunctional families, yes, at times they can hold, you know, heavy-duty grudges against their parents. Now, my daughter, on the other hand, was a tougher kid. She was sort of like me, all right? And so she, I don't believe she ever held any grudges, not that I know of to this day, and, you know, against me. And my son adores me. So the relationships worked out as our lives worked out. And as they got mm-hmm. older and they got married and they chose properly, thank God, and had good partners. And so today we have our own little cluster of family, and that's it. Quite frankly, the only real family I have left on my side are two cousins. The rest died. I mean, they're all much older, okay, much mm-hmm. older. Hey, we had people come over on the Mayflower on my mother's side. Holy crap. So that should tell you something, all right? So, yeah, you know, but, yeah, the dysfunction in families can hurt children horribly. And then they can hold these terrible, you know, feelings against their parents. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, what we've been doing through all this, too, is that we've been going through a whole list, Carol, of different, you know, signs of the depression, okay? So that's what led to that whole uh-huh. conversation, was the fact that, you know, that it was just a way that particular situation affected me was avoiding your family and friends, so to speak, okay? So that's how that all started out. So the next one... Uh-huh. Is a change in your eating habits. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So that does, you know, come into play with a lot of people. You know, it's like you notice a feeling,
yeah.
Feeling hungrier or less hungry. It can work both ways. You know, a weighing
That's
more
true.
Or less. Okay. And some people, with depression turn, you know, to food for comfort. You know, while others lose their appetite, you know, because they feel numb or apathetic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, plus studies have also found that excess fat, okay, is linked to increased inflammation, right, which I think a lot
mm-hmm.
of us can agree with that,
mm-hmm.
which could play a part in causing depression in the first place, okay. So
mm-hmm.
that's just something, you know, that's listed. But the next one, you know, is feeling extreme. I think all of us can kind of agree with this, is feeling exceptionally angry or irritable,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, with that, I'll just read a little bit on it. Maybe y'all can comment on this one would be, you know, we always picture people with depression as sad or morose, so to speak. But there's another side, you know, to it. It's a crabby, snippy, and outright aggravated side. You know, this kind of behavior is seen particularly often in depressed children. Okay, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And those children are the ones who many times do self-mutilation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The kids that I hung out with as a child, I always chose kids that came from homes like mine because I didn't have to prove myself to them. I was accepted by them. See, this is what we do. We're magnets to each other so often. And so I had friends that had eating disorders. You know, they either suffered from bulimia or anorexia or, that was awful. But anyway, or they self-mutilated. They did things like that where I went to the alcohol and drugs, okay? And they weren't being sexually abused at home. I was the only one. In fact, we didn't even talk about that. I had quite a few friends at one time. I had two kinds that I grew up with sort of like, because I moved back and forth from New York or areas from New York or whatever. So I'd make a new group of friends. But so they each all had different lifestyles. So I actually had some friends that came from very good homes, and I was very jealous of them. I was. Because I started to see what normal homes looked like, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Homes that were not dysfunctional. So that was that one set of friends I had for a while. And then the
mm-hmm.
other friends were more like how I grew up and so forth. So they, you know, there's all kinds of ways that depression shows its ugly head, you know?
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
And I was clinically depressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, at one time, mm-hmm.
yeah. I tell you, that's what I was reading before you came on, was
mm-hmm.
the fact that there are different kinds of depression. And one of those in the beginning, you know, was being clinically depressed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. You know, so what I was doing, you know, like I explained, we were going to read, you know, some different signs. And we're already on like number 5 and 6, so... And we only have about another 15 minutes left of the show, so it's going by pretty good. And the next one out of this would be, I guess, basically, you know, besides, you know, feeling angry and irritable and all of that, would be to constantly complain or what they call bitching about aches and pains, okay? Because, you know, technically... Even though that these are considered, you know, mental illnesses, but you know, a lot of research does show that about 70%, okay, of people that meet criteria of this, okay, experience this, you know, major, you know, the pains like joint pain, and they can have bloating and backaches and you know different situations like that. I know earlier that Nancy had mentioned about, you know, we were talking about different things and how to overcome them and this and that, and she was telling us about how, you know, she was, you know, recognizing some things and also setting boundaries, you know, for situations, and I agree with that 100% because I do the same thing. you know, is that it's definitely something that we need to help recognize. And that's what NASCA does here, Carol, is that we actually try to help them recognize these things, you know. So I think that's definitely, you know, a major thing for everyone, because if you're going to keep it concealed, not talk about it, you know, get with, you know, what I would highly recommend other survivors, okay, is that you're going to keep experiencing a lot of this stuff, you know. So that's why we're here. I mean, you know, we all go through a lot of this. You know that, Carol, myself.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I know Nancy, I know Penelope, I know Kim, I know all of us, you know, every single person that I know literally has done this. Mm-hmm.
Well, what you're referring to actually is fibromyalgia, okay?
That too. Yep, that's another one.
Yeah, because you see, years ago, the doctors didn't understand fibromyalgia at all. And a lot of times when a person would go in and say, oh, I ache here, or whatever, they would write down that it was like a mystery, okay? They had these mystery aches and pains, and they didn't know what to do for them. Well, let me tell you something. A lot of people have that fibromyalgia. I have fibromyalgia. I haven't had, thank God, a touch of fibromyalgia in the last, actually, a few years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can have bouts
Thank
of
God.
It. That's, yeah, you can have bouts of it and not know what the heck's wrong with you. Now, what
oh,
I did
boy,
have...
Oh, boy, does that hurt, huh?
Oh, God, yes. Now,
oh, it does.
What
it's
I,
so painful, yeah.
Yes. And but what's interesting about this, though, is that I was on, you know, I always go all over the computer, you know what I do, so... I actually came across these two doctors. I mentioned this only one time a few months ago, and it's right in line to what you're talking about. There were two doctors online. They were not trying to sell anything, okay? They weren't trying to sell products or anything else. They were talking about fibromyalgia. And the one doctor had it. And the other,
right.
his associate, didn't have it, okay,
mm-hmm.
and but understood it. They worked together, and they were trying to educate, I guess, people about fibromyalgia. Now,
right.
the one doctor who had it, you know, he came from a background very similar to ours, okay, and he wouldn't go into exactly the whole detail. He didn't want to tell his whole story there. But he was recognizing the fact that it absolutely does exist and that people, you know, who do have it, thankfully, again, I haven't had it in quite a while, but when you go into that turmoil of fibromyalgia, it affects your whole body, you know, and it can be different areas and all kinds of things, and you just feel horribly, you know, horrible. And the other guy was backing him by the claims because they have patients that are coming in now. And now they are understanding fibromyalgia much better. It's not a mystery anymore. And they link it absolutely to abuse. So you're not crazy. All right. No one's crazy.
No, absolutely. There's no question. No question
yeah.
about that. They sure do.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you
mm-hmm.
what, when fibromyalgia sets in, first of all, you don't know how long it's going to last. You know,
no.
And boy, the burn, the pain that comes off the back of that neck, out of that head, you know, it radiates all over the back,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it
mm-hmm.
affects you in your spine, you know, then that can radiate into your legs. And now, boy, I'm telling you, it's really bad. And, you know, and the only way that when I was getting it really bad, the only way that I could find relief from that. Was that I was taking these topical creams back then where I'd have to put it and rub it all over my neck and into my shoulders, you know, and not to mention taking pain medication on top. But that pain medication I found, Carol, it didn't even touch that fibromyalgia, you know. I mean, unless you went into the hospital and got you a freaking morphine shot or something like that to knock you out, you know, where you couldn't drive home kind of thing. I couldn't find any relief off of it, really, besides that. And that was minimal, you know. And and you know, I always look back at what caused it. You know, what when did I start feeling that, and what triggered it? You know, well, you know, a lot of it was directly related to the abuse. There was no question about it. Every
That's
single
right.
time that was generated, it came off of the abuse that was something that was going on. Now you got to realize back in when I was getting really bad, Cal, it was like in 2017 and 18, right? Not that long ago, considering that whenever I found out that my rapist was still alive and he was still harming kids, that's when I started really just going downhill with those things, you know, where I went after him along with some other people and we finally got him convicted. But that whole traumatic experience to have to relive my stories again and share, you know, in the beginning like that was pretty tough, you know. Without doing that, I would never be the person I am today. You know, there was no way in hell that I would ever be, you know, the man that I've grown into be today if I wouldn't have faced, you know, those challenges in the beginning instead of running away from it, you know. I had to go through it in order, you know, to be what I would call successful from being abused, you know, as a child, you know. So it took a lot. It really did. And you do
it
have
absolutely
to sacrifice
does.
A lot along the way. You know, there's no question that people have to sacrifice along the way to make better changes, not only for yourself, and you should do that always, in my opinion. You should always, you know, make those changes to better yourself. And but, you know, help now that I'm able to help other people, you know, it's rewarding enough to me now to know that I went through the things that I did, you know, in order to be here today. You know, it means a lot that I could help somebody or somebody could call me when they need to, you know. Absolutely.
Well, so now that you've done that, okay, well, now that you've done that where you have told your story and all the things that we do as survivors, how is your fibromyalgia now? Do you have it nearly as much or do you have it at all?
No, I haven't had it in a while. I can't even remember the last time that I had it, to be honest with you. It's been many years. Yeah, it's been at least four. When I say many, for me, that's a lot. You know, at least 4 years from what I can really remember when I've had it last. Yeah, you know. So, and I don't want to go back there either. It seems like to me, like Nancy was mentioning earlier, was that when I feel like that I might be getting too, how would I say this, you know, into a situation where I'm going to recognize that it might trigger me to a certain degree where that might happen. I'm learning how to absorb it and take it in in a much different perspective now. And a lot of it has to do, you know, with the fact that I've educated myself in a lot of ways, you know, by, you know, dealing with a lot of the different, you know, respects that come with this, you know, by other people's stories and my story, listening to Masca. And not only that, I mean, y'all have to realize is that I have been, you know, a part of technically five, you know, worldwide organizations, okay? And every single one has its benefits, you know. On the other hand, you know, there's a lot of things that come along with that you have to, you know, you have to conquer, you have to overcome. And there's a lot of boundaries that get broken with your own boundaries in that situation. In other words, if you set boundaries for something and that, you know, people try to always knock them down, you know, so you have to realize where, you know, that is. And that's what education does for you, you know.
Absolutely.
It really does. It makes you aware of what to look for as you grow. You know, so it's a huge thing that NASCA prevent, you know, helps prevent this. And that's what the intervention and prevention is all about, you know, is to making you aware, dealing with it. If somebody is going through it, you know, hopefully, you know, we can offer some advice as being, you know, a victim of CSA. So, you know, it's a very strong thing that we do here. And I hope that everyone out there is listening to that. because if you are, you know, a victim of CSA, you can always reach us here through our website at NASCA.org. You know, our call-in number is area code 646-595-2118. That's always going to be there. The contact list, very important. I know Carol's there, Bill's there. I'm there, Nancy, Penelope, and all of us are there. So, you know, it's always available. So, you know, that's one thing that that NASCA does have to offer, though, is that our people are there for us, you know. And I know that Carol's there as the official night owl, but I do go through a lot of phone calls myself late at night. We talked about that earlier, Carol, before you came on, was that some people don't want to talk during the day. They might not be able or ready to talk through the day due to sleeping disorders. It could be drugs. It could be alcohol. It could be anything. But all of a sudden, they decide that they want to talk. You know, it could be 2 o'clock in the morning. It could be midnight. You know, 10 o'clock at night. Who knows? Which will
well, I got
off
off the phone at 6
midnight.
O'clock in the morning the other day. 6 o'clock in the morning I got off. But you know what it is? Let me, too, also mention that when you're triggered or something has triggered you, or maybe you did go to sleep and you had a terrible nightmare, or you know, you're having flashbacks or whatever the case might be, somehow in the a.m. hour, if you're not asleep and you know, everything seems much more magnified. And people many times are have their worst problems in the AM, and that's why the phone calls go out there. They need to talk to someone. They just simply do. And so, you know, you get that. You get it. And so that's why we're there. Mm-hmm. And also, too, I've noticed that quite a few people have written, you know, books, and they have workshops type of books that go along with it. Some are very good, some aren't very good, but some of them are very helpful. Mm-hmm. Now, if they get the right books, they can, you know, look at the book, and that'll sort of like if they can focus, it then becomes a focal point. Like they're not thinking so much of how they're feeling. Maybe they're panicky. Maybe they're filled with anxiety. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're filled with this, whatever the case might be. And if they have a workbook to look at, okay, they can, you know, yes, look at their problems and look at the anxiety levels and all this other stuff that they're feeling and then see it in writing, but it'll actually help them calm down because they're not thinking so much about how their body is feeling, okay? Because a lot of this is mind and body, just like with the fibromyalgia, that's your body screaming out. As those two doctors were saying, that's the body screaming out that, you know, you're in pain. You're also in mental pain. The two of them go together, okay?
Right.
So if they don't have these books, you know, to look at or whatever, they end up calling us, hopefully. And, you know, and that's okay because, you know, it does help them. A lot of times I get them laughing by the time they get off the phone. Okay, I got them through that night. I can't help them any more than that. They need therapy. They need to go to therapists if they don't have them. And that's when I bring in the groups that we do offer on NASCA. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback on those groups, and that's over all the way over to the left-hand side on the NASCA website where you have those red blocks and each one has a topic. So the first one is programs, and then I teach them over the phone how to use the programs, and I've gotten emails back. I'm glad they do that at times. You know, some people are enough to do that. And that's good. And so then they want to mingle with people. That way they don't feel alone, and, of course, they're not alone if they join the groups or if they join us here at NASCA. And, you know, so they're never alone. You know, this is important
That's
because
the main
you
thing.
Feel so important. Yes. Yeah.
Right. Well, I just got the 1 minute cue. I do want to go through the last little things here about this and that, you know, a lot of people that are experiencing depression, they could always feel really so damn tired. Okay. And that 10 times more people are likely to have depression. you know, than more people that sleep good. Okay, so that's having like sleep disorders. Like, and also that 90% of people that have depression feel fatigued. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, there's only a couple more left here, would be having no sex drives.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, number 9, only got 2 more to go, would be increased drinking or drug use.
Mm-hmm.
Number 10 is being super zoned out, feeling distracted, noticing you're regularly losing your train of thought. And
mm-hmm.
number 11 would be recurring suicidal thoughts.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
With that being said, and I hate to leave it on that note, the show has come to an end. It's been a very good show. It's gone by really quick. And I want to thank you, Nancy and Carol, for calling in today.
Mm-hmm.
You've
mm-hmm.
been a big help. And we'll see each other very soon.
See you
soon.
Thank
you.
Thank
you. We'll be
on
tomorrow night. We'll be on tomorrow night.
Okay. Yes, we'll be
yes,
on.
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good night now.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.